two young soldiers meet on a jungle trail. One lives, one dies. Their fates are connected for 40 years.
He saw me, I saw him. I had my weapon leveled. So, I mean, I had him dead to rights.
He emailed me and said there's a friend of his named Homer Steedley, who had been a lieutenant and then a captain, a company commander in an infantry division in Vietnam, and that Homer had taken some documents from the body of a North Vietnamese soldier that he had killed, and that he wanted very much to find the family of that soldier and return the documents.
The late Qua Ha Saunders would be like a no-name Saunders, and his soul have to wander around, doesn't know where to come back. And that wandering soul would be in the air forever.
I'm Mark Steiner. Join us for Wandering Souls, produced by the Center for Emerging Media. First, this news.
Bên bờ ao chuồn chuồn vẫn đậu cành bèo tây.
Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome to the first in a series of stories about a war that seems at once very distant, but always with us. The war between America and Vietnam. We call the first of these stories Wandering Souls, because the Vietnamese believe that there's a spiritual bond between the living and the dead, and that unless a soul can come home to its birthplace, it will wander forever. Eight of us decided to go to Vietnam. Three of us were veterans of the Vietnam War, and three of us were war resistors. Warriors and anti-warriors. We were looking to reconnect with a place that had shaped all of our lives for the past 40 years. But even before we left, our journey took a detour. One of our crew, Marine combat veteran and now writer Wayne Carlin, had heard from another vet, a former army officer who had an intriguing story. Thirty-six years ago, he had shot and killed a young Vietnamese soldier. It was his first kill. 36 years later, he had decided he needed to find the family of the man he killed. Over the next 5 months, we learned the rest of the story. The story of two young soldiers, wandering souls of the Vietnam War. Homer Steedley arrived in Vietnam in August of 1968, a young farm boy from Bamberg, South Carolina, a fresh-faced officer, all of 20 years old.
Some of us came over there gung-ho, save the world from communism. I thought Barry Settler and that Green Beret song was cool, you know. I used to sing that. I mean, I bought it hook, line, and sinker.
The bloodiest years of the Vietnam War were still ahead, but already rumors were circulating about planned troop reductions and efforts to wind down the war. So Homer knew they weren't planning to win anything.
So we knew we weren't planning to win anything. But what happens then is you're there. And now that you're there, your goal is to get back alive and get as many of your people back alive as you can. So you concentrate on that. Your job now is to to pursue the war and kill the enemy, because the more of them are dead, the less of them are going to be shooting at you.
Men who mean just what they say, the brave men of the Green Beret. Silver wing.
It was March 18th, 1969. Homer was stationed with his unit in the highlands near the borders of Laos and Cambodia. That day he was on patrol along a trail that cut through the triple canopy jungle. This was part of the Ho Chi Minh Trail, which the North Vietnamese used to carry arms and supplies from north to south. Homer stopped to take a break.
This was about 10 or 11 in the morning, and it was sunny by then. It was just at the point where it was starting to get really hot. We're probably 90, 95 degrees. And all of a sudden, like I say, I turned around, and there he was. And strangest thing, at first it was almost surreal. I mean, we're all in green fatigues, you know, muddy and sweaty and really looking like guys in the field. Here, this guy comes around the corner. He's got on light khaki uniform, clean light khaki pith helmet. I mean, he's like he just came out of an award ceremony or something. I must be hallucinating. The heat's gotten to him, you know.
The Vietnamese soldier Homer faced that day was Hong Nhat Dam. He was the second oldest son among six children from Thai Giang, a small farming village not far from Haiphong.
Dam always kept his books in order, and he was very careful. He was neat, from his hair to his way of walking, to his clothes. We did not have many clothes, but his clothes always looked pressed, even though we did not have an iron. And he always combed his hair in a special way, pressing the comb down to make a curl on top at the front. His hair was always shiny. He did not talk a lot, but he cared about everybody, my parents. He cared about even the smallest things.
My name is Hoang Dat Cat. I was born in 1954, when Dam was still at home, since he was a kid. He liked soccer very much, and he played in the village team. Some of his teammates now still remember his image.
Do you ever think about what might have been happening to Dom in the 5, 10, 15, 20 minutes before he saw you, given how he looked, where he came from?
When he first came around the corner, he was looking down at the ground and just, you know, putting one foot in front of the other. So he'd probably been marching all day. So he was just traveling, and he didn't expect to see anybody out there. It was a wide-open trail. It was a nice, clear trail. And he was just diddy-bopping along. When he looked up and saw me, he started pulling his weapon off his shoulder. My weapon was already down at my waist, so it was ready to fire. And I hollered at him, and he didn't stop. He tried to get that weapon down, and just before he got it leveled on me, I fired.
The encounter on the trail lasted only a few moments.
My total abject fear of that moment, I just cut loose and a couple of rounds stitching through the chest and just killed him instantly. I mean, I could look in his eyes. We were so close together. We were probably 30 feet apart. And then later I look at him, and he was so young. I mean, he was a kid. It kind of warped my mind there for a while. But it's a chance encounter, you know. There were two of us. We both panicked, and one of us walked away alive, and I'm sorry he's dead, but I'm glad I'm alive.
For a few minutes, Homer stared down at the young man he had just killed. Then he bent down and felt through the pockets of his uniform. There was a notebook with the neatest, delicate writings, intricate anatomical drawings, poems, and what looked like identification papers.
I didn't know. I mean, I just thought there would be a really good keepsake or memento of the war, you know, just to show the kind of people we were facing. And I sent them back. When I got them back, I sent them back to Mom, and I told them, put these away somewhere safe because these are important, you know. And by the time I got back to the States, I was so stressed out that I didn't want to think about Vietnam. Just completely forgot about those documents.
When Dam knew that he would go to the front, he was very happy. He cavorted with happiness. But my mother turned her head to wipe her tears away. After he left, we folded his clothes, put them aside, and my mom would sniff them because she missed him.
Tôi là Phạm Thị Minh.
My name is Pham Thi Minh. I'm 64 years old now. I married Dam when I was only 17 years old. It was 4 o'clock in the morning when he left. He took the knapsack. I took my conical hat and my sandals. And we walked to Shaoxiang, taking shortcuts through the paddy fields, so I had to roll up my pants. When we got to the main road, I washed my legs and hands and put my sandals back on, and then we walked. Whenever I saw cars passing by, I was scared and had to hug him. He was very caring. He told us that if he went to the war, he would either lie under green grass or come back with red medals. And if he didn't come back, we had to take his place and comfort mother. Every night when I was in bed, I kept thinking that if only there were some news telling us that he was seriously wounded, that he lost his legs and arms, and he could not tell the family. Then I wished I knew that, and I would go look for him. But it did not come true.
At first, the news about his death was just rumors, people whispering.
We did not get the official news until 1972 that Dam died in a hamlet named Plung An, but they did not have the name of the cemetery where his body was moved.
For the next 36 years, no one in Dam's family knew for sure what happened to him. For 36 years, his notebooks lay in a darkened corner of a home in South Carolina, till they began their journey back.
When I opened that envelope, it was with a great deal of trepidation, and reaching my hand in and touching those documents, touching the notebook, I had the real sensation that I was touching Dam, because I was physically touching what I knew his family, what I knew the Vietnamese believed was what was left of his soul, what the part of his soul that could be brought back to the family, and which had now been given over to me. This soul was now, you know, in my house.
His family believed Dam's soul was wandering, lost. Homer Steedley's soul was also lost. He was haunted by stories of the war he couldn't tell anybody else. By Dam's soul living in his soul. I'm Mark Steiner. In a moment, part 2 of Wandering Souls. Welcome. You're listening to Wandering Souls, a documentary on the Vietnam War from the Center for Emerging Media. I'm Mark Steiner. In 1970, Homer Steedley came home from Vietnam.
The lunatic is in my head. The lunatic is in my head. You raise the blade. You make the change. You rearrange me till I'm sane. You lock the door.
I came back from the war. It's like somebody turned off a light switch.
He was 23 years old and had been through two tours of combat duty. He was an officer, decorated for bravery. He had led men into battle, had led some to their deaths. Then he went home to South Carolina, and like thousands of vets who'd seen combat, found himself out of sync with the familiar world he'd left behind.
And then, of course, friends eventually start coming around and want to know about Vietnam and all that, and you start talking, and the next thing you know, you look around, and they've gotten quiet and they've left because you said something that shocked them so bad. They don't come back. I mean, they don't come back ever.
So Homer stopped talking. He tried to ignore the movies in his head, images of things he had seen and done, things that made him different.
The jungle opens up, and there's this little patch of elephant grass. All of a sudden, snipers. And the first shot that was fired, I was walking right behind one of the guys in the platoon that I was accompanying. He came back and just knocked me down. I mean, just like a football tackle. He had taken one right through the forehead. And all I can see is that little pink waxy inside lining of the skull. His brains are gone. Now I'm scared. Now I know there are snipers up there. Well, if they're up there, they can see us. So we can't stay where we are. We've got to get up and move. So I yelled to everybody, there are snipers in the trees. We got to get out of here. And one of the guys in the platoon I was with jumped up. He didn't even get halfway up before the sniper nailed him. So after that, nobody else wants to get up. And all of a sudden, I don't hear the noise anymore. It's quiet. I can feel the warm sunshine. I can smell the fresh cut grass. I can see ants walking along the ground. I feel something in my mouth, and must be part of that scrambled eggs I had for the sea rations this morning. So I chew on it, you know. And then all of a sudden, I noticed the ants are carrying little pink things, little globules, pink, really pretty looking, pearly pink globules. About that time, it dawns on me. What they're carrying are bits of that guy's brain. My mind just explodes because I realize what I'm chewing on is part of that guy's brains.
Homer had begun drinking after his return. He landed a good job at the University of South Carolina fixing computers. But he was living alone in a trailer 30 miles from campus. More and more, he isolated himself, engaging in solitary and dangerous sports.
The first 9 or 10 years in the States, I was going through post-traumatic stress. I did all the adrenaline sports. You know, I raced motorcycles, stock cars, jumped out of airplanes, flew, underwater cave diving, mountain climbing. I was crazy. I was hunting that adrenaline high still, you know.
The images persisted except for one. It was locked away inside his head. The memory of his first kill, the young soldier on the Ho Chi Minh Trail. And he didn't remember the things he had taken from the young man's body. So for 36 years, they lay in his mother's attic in Bamberg, South Carolina. A world away from South Carolina, in the hamlet of Tai Giang, the family of Hong Nhat Dam waited for him to come home. Two sons from Dam's family went to war. Neither came home. The eldest brother, Chi, had been captured and executed by the South Vietnamese. His body had been thrown into the sea. The second son, Dam, was also missing. In 1972, officials brought a death certificate to the village. Neighbors came to commiserate. A family lit incense.
Oh, My name is Huang Huilo. My brother Dan was 6 years older than I. Even when we got his death certificate, we still thought maybe it was a mistake, and maybe he was missing and his unit could not find him.
So the family began a dogged search to find out what happened to their brother.
In the spiritual life of Vietnamese people, we believe in Sống Gửi Thác Về, which means that people who live in this life need to rest in their home soil after their death, so that descendants will remember and light incense for them, and we, the living, will be at peace. If we can't find his body, then we will forever have to think about that unfulfilled task, because according to our tradition, everybody has to go back to his place of origin to be buried.
Dam had become one of the more than 300,000 wandering souls created by the war with America. They were the missing in action, thousands buried in unmarked graves, and their families engaged in desperate efforts to find them and bring them home. Many consulted fortune tellers. So did Dom's family.
But I remember what my mother said after she came back from her consulting with the fortune tellers. She said that many of them told her that Dom was still alive, but he was living in a very far place in a foreign country, and that he would come back in glory.
So we encouraged her to believe that and not to think about it too much. And we even attended seances, during which Dam would appear and always say he was very sad and cry. We thought that he was sad because his wife had gotten married again, but he only said, "I'm very sad."
Thirty years went by. The family made one more effort to find him. They turned to Dom's old friend.
My name is Pham Quang Huy. In 2002, Dom's family, including his brother Cat and his brother-in-law Dieu, came to me to ask if I could accompany them to the south to look for his body. So we searched more than 100 tombs, but could not find the tomb with Dom's name. So I told his brothers that this is all I could do, since we had no more information. And sadly, we had to go home.
Home to Dom's village of 6,000 people that lost 200 soldiers killed in action, 200 more missing in action, over 700 wounded, and 300 who suffered from the effects of Agent Orange. The military told Huy and the brothers that Dom's name was on a list of martyrs, but the area contained many burial places, and no one could give them the name of the cemetery where Dom might be buried. Homer Steedley's life began to change when he met Tibby Dozier at the university. She was the daughter of a World War II general and the granddaughter of a World War I hero who was awarded the Congressional Medal of Honor. She knew what soldiers lived through and was a willing listener to the details of his experiences and the memories he was now willing to allow himself to recall.
Well, when we first met, Homer was very intense, very serious, and very shy. And I did make it my goal. We had to break down these barriers.
You're doing a good job.
But things have changed so much. I'd say so much in the last 3 years. Homer finally retired from his job. And I think that has given having the time to go ahead and confront some of these memories has made a world of difference. We had come back from a trip. Everything was great. We were actually looking for a home up here. And I went to bed and took a nap. And I started hearing what I thought was an animal wailing outside the window. And I got up to check. It was Homer in the living room watching the movie We Were Soldiers about Vietnam.
I didn't realize I was making enough noise for her to hear.
Well, Homer had had several smaller breakthroughs of letting emotions out prior to that. But that afternoon, it was when you were finally relaxed, our life was changing for the better. It was almost like he finally was able, he had that strength to let go of it.
Homer started a website where he wrote about his experiences in Vietnam. He began to correspond with other Vietnam vets. But there was still a missing piece, something haunting Homer that he didn't know was there. The memory of that incident would start his real homecoming from the war. It began after a phone call from his mother.
My mom was cleaning out the attic at her place. Found lots of stuff. She had kept all the letters I'd sent her from Vietnam. And she says, I got some stuff here that looks like drawings, medical drawings, and it looks like it's written in Vietnamese that I think you sent while you were over there. And I immediately remembered what it was.
Homer and Tibby went up to his mother's attic. They found Dom's notebooks with his elegant writing and delicate anatomical drawings. The memories of that moment of his first kill came flooding back.
And I realized that I wanted to try and get those back to whoever they belonged to, just simply because it belonged to them. You know, and it'd probably be the last thing they had from that individual. So I was really interested in getting back. I had no idea how I was going to do it.
But Homer had read a book called Light Ruck by Tom Lacombe, who had been a platoon sergeant in the 4th Infantry, in the area where Homer had been. He contacted Lacombe, who put him in touch with another writer and Vietnam vet named Wen Carlin.
Tom emailed me and said there's a friend of his named Homer Steedley, who had been a lieutenant and then a captain, a company commander in an infantry division in Vietnam, and that Homer had taken some documents from the body of a North Vietnamese soldier that he had killed, and that he wanted very much to find the family of that soldier and return the documents. Homer had scanned the documents onto his website, so I was able to look at them, and then I asked some Vietnamese friends here to help me translate what we could see on the website, so that we could get the name of the soldier that he had killed. In fact, I thought that I could help him, and probably the way I could help him best was to get in touch with Phan Thanh Hao, because she is a journalist.
Phan Thanh Hao is a translator and a magazine writer in Hanoi. She had worked with Wayne on a collection of stories by Vietnamese writers and poets.
I had been involved in interviewing hundreds and hundreds of Vietnamese veterans, listening to hundreds and hundreds of poems. When I moved out of my job as a kind of press officer, I feel that I would totally forget the war, forget everything. Then when I have to read the website, Homer's website, with all the image, with the medals, with the certificate, with the diaries, I think it was my nightmare.
But Howe agreed to help. She and her editor, Yvonne, placed an article in the magazine. It was coming out in March for the 30th anniversary of the war.
Báo Giáo dục Thời đại của chúng tôi khi làm số báo 30 tháng 4 thì có nhận được một bức thư của nhà văn Oikalin.
When we were planning the special issue to commemorate the 30th of April, we got a letter from Wayne Carlin. In his letter, he wrote about Homer's issue and his desire to return all the documents of the late Hung Nguoc Dam. So we decided that all this information must appear in this special issue to see if we could reach Dam's family. Then, when the newspaper appeared, 2 days later, Dom's sister got the news.
I remember that day. A relative came by just before I went to work and gave me the newspaper. When I read the article, I could not stand. I collapsed when I read his name. And I told my husband, Dam has returned.
Wayne told Homer that the family wanted Homer to come and bring the documents to them. Homer said he couldn't do it. He asked Wayne to go in his place.
When I finally became convinced that Homer was not going to go, and he asked me to bring back these documents, he told me he was going to send them to me. And he did. What I wasn't prepared for was how fast that had happened, how fast these moved out of being something that had been kind of an abstract idea and into a solid reality. He sent it overnight express, so, you know, we talked one day, and the next day this padded envelope arrived at my house. When I opened that envelope, it was with a great deal of trepidation, and then reaching my hand in and touching those documents, touching the notebook, I had the real sensation that I was touching Dom, because I was physically touching what I knew his family, what I knew the Vietnamese believed was what was left of his soul, what the part of his soul that could be brought back to the family, and which had now been given over to me.
We'll return to our story after this brief break. You're listening to Wandering Souls, a documentary from the Center for Emerging Media. You're listening to Wandering Souls, a documentary on the Vietnam War from the Center for Emerging Media. I'm Mark Steiner. On the 28th of May, 2005, a small van made its way north from Hanoi. It traveled along roads lined with factories and lush green rice paddies toward the village of Thai Giang. In the van were two American writers, who were also Vietnam vets, Wayne Carlin and George Evans. Evans' wife, Daisy Zamora, and Vietnamese journals Phan Thanh Hao and Y Bon. They carried with them a box containing the journals, letters, and drawings of Hung Nguoc Dam, The documents had lain in an attic in Bamberg, South Carolina, for 36 years. That day, they would be returned to his family. Homer Steedley, who had taken them from the body of the man he shot and killed one morning in 1969, wasn't there to greet the crowd of villagers gathered to greet the caravan. Homer had stayed home in America, and instead he sent a letter to the family, apologizing, telling them he could not afford the trip, and even if he could, was too shy to meet them.
I'm very touched that you have an altar that keeps Dam's memory alive. It hurts to think of the hundreds of thousands on both sides of that tragic war who still mourn the loss of their loved ones. Sometimes the guilt of surviving can be overwhelming. What will I say when I enter into eternity? Is there a little-known footnote to the commandment, thou shalt not kill, that forgives killing in combat? Look what I did in the ignorance of my and folly of my youth. I thought I was a true patriot, so why doesn't that give me comfort at age 59? Dam and I met by chance on a trail. He and I saw each other, and both of us attempted to shoot the other. I lived, he died instantly. For over a quarter of a century, I've carried the image of this young body lying there lifeless. It was my first kill. I wish you could say it was my last. Why did a medic die and I live? I don't know. Maybe someday humanity will have the wisdom to settle conflicts without sending its youth to kill strangers. People should know what our leaders are doing when they resort to armed conflict to solve political problems. In my dying moment, Dam and many of his comrades will surely call to me. I'm not afraid, only saddened. Perhaps we will meet again as friends. Respectfully yours, Homer.
So Homer didn't hear the wailing that went up as the caravan arrived in the village.
Khi mà còn cách nhà gia đình của liệt sĩ Hoàng Ngọc Đảm độ chừng khoảng độ 3-40 cây thì đã có hai.
The crying here. You know that we there was a rule in Vietnamese funerals that you didn't cry when you saw someone die immediately. You have to wait until the soul is going out. Then you cry to welcome the soul, and that wailing was that cry.
Tiền của âm phủ của người Việt Nam là rất là hay dùng.
The family and neighbors and gathered dignitaries searched the faces of the Americans, trying to figure out which one was Homer.
Lúc đầu thì người ta nhiều người nói như này, kể cả bạn bè của chú, người ta bảo là chắc là ông hôn mơ sẽ về để ông trao kỷ vật này.
At the beginning, people here, including my friends, were saying that surely Homer would come back to return the documents. But maybe he was afraid that we were still holding a grudge against him and that we would take revenge by throwing stones.
Everybody come and asks us, where is Homer? Where is Homer? They really willing that Homer must appear there on that ceremony. And some people.
Dom's youngest brother, Luong, stared at George Evans, the Vietnam vet who had accompanied Wayne Carlin to the village.
He stood at the door and he looked at me, and he had not a trace of emotion. A stony look. The anger came from him believing that we were deceiving him. Perhaps out of fear, out of shame. And once he finally understood it, it was okay.
The Americans walked through a gauntlet of wailing villagers into the village community center. Before an altar decorated with flowers and incense sticks, in front of family, friends, and village dignitaries, Wayne Carlin handed Dom's possessions to the eldest surviving brother, Cut.
They had their white mourning headbands on, and they were just touching these documents like they were something sacred, and just weeping over them, it's incredible.
These are the sisters?
Sisters, brothers, there's a very big extended family now. There's aunts, there's uncles, there's kids, other new generations out there. And one woman is very, through the whole thing, she would not stop weeping. This is somebody who knew him when she was 7 years old, his niece, and he'd carry her around. And, and of course, they had his photograph. It was the first time I've seen a picture of the guy. He looks like a kid.
He's a kid.
Yeah. And they had people, you know, various village dignitaries and from the province come up and make a speech. And they asked me to come up and say something, and then, you know, and then just say,
"Has been in my house?"
I just said that, you know, looking at his diary, it struck me how much of a waste it had been, that this was such a valuable life that had been taken away, and this was the sorrow of the war, and how much I regretted that, and I just get whatever came to my mind.
What a waste.
Yeah.
A talented person as well. And I can always say our regrets that we're in this country.
People came around and they were just, you know, pressing us. I mean, afterwards there was this whole crowd. It's just touching us, touching Daisy particularly. You know, they were very touched. Daisy was there. It's not like Hanoi. You go out into the villages, they see very few Westerners.
It was like we were receiving his body. The whole village welcomed him back, and everybody wore mourning bands, just like his body had been returned.
Sometime after the ceremony, Dom's brothers and sisters and his army buddy Huy opened the box that contained Dom's belongings. They unwrapped the Vietnamese flag that covered them. They held the certificates of merit given to Dom by his commanding officers, his medals for valor as a medic, his notebooks decorated with flowers and anatomical drawings, a game of tic-tac-toe, poems. The family picked them up, held them lovingly, remembering Dom.
He can rest peacefully now. When that American shot him, Dom looked directly into his eyes. Maybe he thought that this man also has a good heart. So he let him keep his notebooks and papers for 36 years. I think Dom must be happy now, in another world, satisfied with what the American has done.
The family discussed Homer's letters and the things he'd written on his website about his encounter with their brother.
Our family and people of this village feel very proud because the enemy who killed our man has now come back and praised us. Because the American, our one-time enemy, the one who killed my brother, now praised him. Homer said that my brother had the proud stature of a superior person.
Back in North Carolina, Homer and his wife Tibby heard about the ceremony by email.
Well, the night after we found out about the documents being returned, we lit a candle for Dom, and I asked Homer how he felt. And he said he felt a real release of this burden that he had carried for a long time. And we kind of felt possibly Dom's spirit felt a kind of closure in a way, if that's possible. But there was just a wonderful healing that took place.
Mọi người cũng thấy rằng là đúng như là Đảng và Nhà nước mình đã có một cái chủ trương là khép lại quá khứ và hướng tới tương lai.
If after he killed my brother, he did not pick up the documents, then we would never have seen my brother's documents again. But after killing my brother, Homer's human feelings arose, and I remember reading the article in which he said that my brother was too young. And in just the blink of an eye, he's shot. You know that, in wars, everything happened within a few seconds. And afterwards, even if he had regrets, there was nothing he could do. I read Homer's diary about that many times. How he had given the documents to his mother and how they haunted him. So that now that he cannot come here, we all sympathize. And we want him to come here and not worry about anything. It is just that now he and our family have some connection.
So I would like to go back.
Not long ago, I played a videotape of the village ceremony for Homer.
I'd like to go back just to have a little closure for myself, to remember Vietnam in a non-combat way. And I would like to meet Dam's family. I'd like to meet them face to face and just let them know how deeply sorry I am that it happened. And hopefully they'll meet me and get to know me a little bit and realize that I'm not quite an evil demon like they might have thought at one time.
I don't think they think you're an evil demon now.
No, I don't either. I think from what I've heard about them that they're a very religious community. And that says a lot. They have a deep connection with the divine, and so do I. So we'll connect that way.
In Vietnam, you know, we have a certain spiritual relation that we call karma. We think that Dam was a sacred soul. He was so sacred that he could gather us together. The one who had fought and the one who were thirsty to have peace. He was so sacred to gather all of us here to do this thing, to meet today. So that is what we believe.
Hong Nhat Dam's documents now rests on the family altar in Thai Giang. His soul drawn back to the place where he was born. Homer Steedley has found a measure of peace with his wartime memories. A chance encounter between two young men on a jungle trail began a story that hints of the kind of world that might be built from the ashes of conflict. For Wayne Carlin, it's a satisfying ending to a most unusual story of war and its aftermath.
The Vietnam War itself has been a war for many people without any endings, and that people want and need and crave somehow to bring it together to end it. And it rarely happens because it was such a terrible and complex war that we never get to those kind of endings. Here was somebody who had the opportunity for himself and for so many other people to actually create one ending. So it was very powerful. I just felt privileged to be able to be a part of it because you rarely get a chance to do something that good. It was immensely satisfying and emotional.
This program is dedicated to the men and women who fought in the Vietnam-American War, to those who died, and to those who are still missing in action, to the wandering souls of both sides. You can find the complete story of Homer Steedley and Hong Nhat Dam on our website, www.centerforemergingmedia.org. That's one word. Thousands of journals and diaries from the bodies of North Vietnamese soldiers, the fighters of the National Liberation Front, known as Viet Cong, are stored on microfiche at the National Archives. Some 9,000 have been returned to Vietnam through the Vietnam Veterans of America. I'm Mark Steiner, and thank you for listening. This has been a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our story was based in part on Wayne Carlin's essay titled Wandering Souls. Major funding was provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the Osprey Foundation. The executive producer was Mark Steiner. The producer, Steve Elliott. Editor, Deborah George. Engineers, Preston Brown and Andrew Epic. Administrative producer, Valerie Williams. Field recording engineer, Neilan Crawford. Special consulting producer, Wayne Carlin. Coordinator in Vietnam, Dinh Nhuc Truc. Project consultant in Vietnam, Phan Thanh Hao. Studio recording and mixing facilities provided by Clean Cuts Music and Sound Design. Studio engineer, Andrew Epic, with additional help from Rich Isaac. Special thanks to Jack Hireman, Performance Workshop Theater of Baltimore, WIPR, Baltimore's NPR news station, Louisa Nielsen, Ward Coe, Al Engelman, Mendel Nacht, SUNY Khalid, and Mary Jane Williams.